This is Diana Cordy with Book Talk. My guest is pediatrician and public health advocate, Dr. Mona Hanna Attisha. She's the author of What the Eyes Don't See, A Story of Crisis, Resistance, and Hope in an American City. She put the tainted public water supply in Flint, Michigan, on the national news, and describes her book as a story of a government poisoning its own citizens and then lying about it. Welcome to our program.
It's great to be with you, Diana.
When your Flint water story begins, what was your day job?
My day job was a pediatrician. I'm a pediatrician right here in Flint, Michigan. I'm also a medical educator. So I'm the director of our pediatric residency program, which means I get the privilege of training the next generation of pediatricians to serve our children.
Complaints about public water in Flint have been buzzing around long enough for you to think of it as white noise, right?
Absolutely. So for about a year and a half, 17 months, we were hearing noise about the water, bacteria and color and odor and taste and skin issues. And with every kind of red flag that came up, we were being reassured. The state was saying that everything was okay.
What changed your mind?
So, you know, I believed that everything was okay for a year and a half. I mean, who wouldn't believe that when you turn on your tap, your water wouldn't be okay? This is America, the 21st century, richest country in the history of the world. In Michigan, we are literally in the middle of the Great Lakes, which is the largest source of fresh water in the world. But despite all that, we have rules and regulations and people whose job is to make sure that our water is okay. So I was very much telling my patients who came in with concerns that the water is fine. How could the water not be fine? But that all changed in late August of 2015. And very randomly at my home with a high school girlfriend and a kind of last minute barbecue. Hey, are you free? Are you free? Come over. And my high school girlfriend, of all things, happens to be a drinking water expert. And she was the one that told me that Flint wasn't treating its water properly. And because of that, there would be lead in the water. And that's really when my life changed. Never before that point did I hear about lead being in the water. And when a pediatrician hears the word lead, there's really no going back.
Referring to your book title, what are some of the things the eyes don't see?
So quite literally, we do not see lead in water. It's invisible, it's odorless, it's tasteless. We also don't see the consequences of lead exposure. In pediatrics, it's known as a silent pediatric epidemic. Kids don't come in with symptoms of lead poisoning. It's something we see much later, years, sometimes decades later, when they have problems with cognition and behavior and other issues. But the story and this title is so much more than just about Flint. It's about people, places, and problems that we choose not to see. And it is a rallying cry for us to open our eyes to these problems. You know, I was blinded to these problems for about a year and a half, and it took someone to open my eyes, but there's problems all around us that we need to see and act on.
When you took the results to the people, your results, your own research of what the lead levels were in water, to the people who were supposed to keep the water supply healthy, as you said, what reaction did you get?
Sure. So just like everybody else in this story who raised concerns about this water was attacked, I was also attacked. So we shared very publicly the research on children's blood lead levels. And the state and several arms of the state said we were wrong, that the science was attacked, my credibility was attacked. And the book kind of goes through in dramatic detail how that felt. You can't even prepare yourself for that kind of attack. And at that point, I even believed them. Like when the state says you're wrong, like, oh my gosh, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I screwed up. Maybe I should have just stayed a pediatrician doing my job and not raised my voice. But that was a brief moment. And ultimately, I realized that, hey, doesn't matter. They can attack me all they want. This has nothing to do with me. This is about the children that I literally have taken an oath to protect. I mean, the kids got me back in this fight, and we fought back with more numbers, and ultimately the truth of our science spoke truth to power.
How did you organize your book to tell your story?
Yeah, so this book is so much more than kind of this fast-paced retelling of the Flint crisis. It's a memoir. So in order to understand kind of my role and how I ended up in Flint, you have to know who I am. And there's a lot of personal and family in there. So I am a first-generation immigrant. We came to this country when I was 4, fleeing the regime of Saddam Hussein. And for me and my family, that American dream was absolutely realized. So the way I see the world is with the kind of fresh eyes of this immigrant who is every day grateful to be in this country, but also with the eyes of someone who knows what injustice can be and what people in power can do to vulnerable populations. And it is with that perspective that, you know, I pledged my career to service and to being in Flint. So that is definitely kind of weaved into this book. And I never thought that immigrant story would be so timely as it is right now in our nation.
Well, what's the status of Flint's water now?
Flint's water has improved significantly. There's a lot less lead in our water. We actually meet guidelines and minimal compliance requirements. However, Flint is still on filtered and bottled water because we are replacing our lead pipes. So the 18 months that we were on this corrosive, untreated water ate up our pipes. It ate up that infrastructure. And we are really leading the nation in terms of getting rid of the lead from our pipes. That's a long process. We're actually doing it, though, in less time than any other city has done it. Only 2 other cities have actually replaced their lead pipes. We'll be the 3rd. And while we do this infrastructure, earth-moving work, people still need to be on filtered and bottled water because of the risk of lead release.
Woven through your book, you write of disillusionment with the government because of the water crisis, but at the same time, you talk about the benefits of good government. Are these truths that happen at the same time?
Absolutely. So, you know, the story of Flint is a story where, you know, government fell asleep at the wheel. However, I am a believer in government. And, you know, the true villains of the story are the consequences of austerity and budget cuts and departments that were understaffed and under-resourced. We need good government. We need smart government. We need responsive and accountable government. And that's not what we had at the state. Flint is also a story of what happens when we take away democracy. This is not just happening in Flint, but there's issues with democracy all over this nation with gerrymandering and voter disenfranchisement. But Flint had lost democracy. We were under state-appointed emergency management, and democracy is necessary. People's voices need to be at the table to make these kind of decisions and also to hold folks accountable.
Does the work go on in Michigan?
Absolutely. And that is so much of what the story is. It's a story of obviously the crisis, but a story of activism and resistance. But it is so much a story of hope. And we are building incredible hope in Flint right now. And it's not just a word that I say. It is based on science and evidence in terms of the recovery, especially of our children. And that's what I want people to go away when they read the story is that we all have a role to play in terms of being activists and resistors and a role to play in improving, you know, the lives of children wherever they may be. You know, Flint is a story where common sense science was denied. It's a story where science fundamentally spoke truth to power, and it is a story where we are leaning on the incredible science of child development to turn the story around and to make Flint a model of recovery, not a model of crisis.
Do you feel that the water problem throughout the state requires lots of vigilance going forward, or is it resolved?
So I think what I've learned so much about water over the last couple of years, definitely not something I learned in medical school. And I think I should get like an honorary degree in water or something, but I've learned that there's a lot of vigilance that needs to happen nationally. The rules on the book that protect our drinking water are inadequate. They have not caught up with the incredible science, especially around lead. Action levels are too low. There's minimal oversight. There's a lot of loopholes. So as a nation, we were never intended to get lead-free water. There's so much that needs to happen and so much advocacy and vigilance and accountability to make sure that we optimally can protect our drinking water.
My guest is Dr. Mona Hanna Atisha, author of What the Eyes Don't See, published by One World. This is Diana Cordy with Book Talk.